Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. And by the Rockstar Chronicles Series 1. That's my new book featuring over 45 intimate conversations with the greatest music legends the world will ever know, available now at bookbaby.com and amazon.com. Alan Farst, founder of Niche Productions, is thrilled to announce the signing of a distribution deal with Gravitas Ventures, a Red Arrow Studios company, to release his latest film, Chuck Lavelle, The Tree Man, a sterling documentary on the rock and roll pianist keyboardist often described as the fifth Rolling Stone. And the film was released to several video on demand outlets on December 2020. Directed by Farst, Chuck Lavelle, The Tree Man provides an epic, in-depth look into Lavelle's life, both on and off the stage. Lavelle has played and toured with the Rolling Stones since 1982, and his status of rock royalty may be equaled only by his stature within the world of environmental forestry, where he previously has been named the National Tree Farmer of the Year in the United States. It's this fascinating combination of passions, coupled with more than 80 gripping interviews from legendary musicians, with a combined 58 Grammy Awards, that already has produced quite the buzz for the film. The documentary captivated crowds last year at both the Macon Film Festival and Sedona International Film Fest, the latter of which recognized the film as the 2020 People's Choice Award. This is a must-see film for anyone who loves great music and great documentaries, says Patrick Schweiss, artistic director of the Sedona International Film Fest. Director Alan Farst has managed to capture the life of one of the greatest keyboard legends, Chuck Lavelle, who has worked with all the greatest musicians. The Tree Man was a rousing hit at our festival, with audience members cheering and raving about the film. The documentary is full of star power, including interviews with Billy Bob Thornton, Mick Jagger, President Jimmy Carter, Eric Clapton, Keith Richards, Bonnie Raitt, Dickie Betts, Paul Schaefer, Chris Robinson, Charlie Daniels, Miranda Lambert, Charlie Watts, Bruce Hornsby, Julian Lennon, Mike Mills, John Bell, Pat Monahan, Ronnie Wood, Warren Haynes, John Mayer, David Gilmour, and many, many more. Please welcome legendary keyboardist, singer, songwriter, tree farmer, Chuck Lavelle, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Chuck.
My goodness, Ray, what an intro. Well, you're most kind, my friend. I really appreciate that.
You deserve it.
It's just a joy to speak with you.
You deserve it, man. You've had a wonderful, wonderful life. I love it in your film how you say it's been a love affair, meaning your wife, who you've been together now for, wow, over what, 40 years or so. And that's the same way I feel about my wife. We've been together for about 40 years, and I know what you mean.
Yes, I've been 48 for my wife, Rose Lane, and I now, and we have truly been blessed. A wonderful partnership. We have tons of fun together. We laugh all the time, and, you know, we've got two beautiful daughters that have two children each, so four grandchildren for us, and, nothing better than that.
That's the best of life right there, man. I've got five grandchildren, and there's nothing better than, you know, babysitting for the grandkids.
Isn't that the truth?
That's how I get my exercise.
And oh man, chasing those things will wear you out.
I tell you, man, you're a natural behind the camera. You really are.
Well, I appreciate that. And it was really a joy working with my filmmaker, Alan Forrest, a talented guy. You know, we had quite a lot of raw footage, as you can imagine. He followed me around for about 3.5 years.
Wow.
Several places across the world, and of course, including our home at Charlaine in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we had all this stuff, we had all these interviews with people that I'd been privileged and honored to work with, and we had the interviews with people from the environmental world that I also dabble in, and then the story of Rose Lane and myself, and I said, how in the world are you going to stitch this thing together to make any sense out of it? And Alan spent like 6 weeks in his basement, 8 to 10 hours a day editing, and he just came up with a wonderful plan, and I'm so proud of the way that he stitched it all together.
Yeah, he did a wonderful job. You know what puzzles me is that, is it a lake or a pond near your home? It used to be small, but you guys made it big like that. How did you do that?
Well, we put that structure in the early 90s,
uh-huh.
About the era that I was working for Eric Clapton. And when the gentleman came out that had the expertise to flag off what the pond would be, his initial flagging, he showed it to me, and I said, hey, man, can you make it any bigger? So he went back and dug a little deeper, and then I said, can you make it any bigger than that? So finally, he came up with the final plan that we used to put it together, and we love that pond. We've spent a lot of wonderful hours sitting there just taking in the breeze and enjoying the sights and the sounds and seeing some wildlife come in every now and then. It's been a great addition to our place.
Oh, it's beautiful, man. He did such a great job. I'm in the west coast of Florida, and we got a lot of those man-made type little ponds and lakes over here, but I've never seen one like yours. Yours is outstanding.
Well, I appreciate that, and as I said, we do enjoy it. It's also great when the kids come down and the grandkids, they can splash around in it.
Sure.
Great for swimming, and we have a structure. I guess you can see it on the film. I can't quite recall, but a long time ago, a good friend of mine gave me a cute little wooden boat to use on the pond.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I better build a dock if I'm going to, you know, have a boat. So we built the dock with a couple of slips in it. And then I said, you know, if the rains come, that boat's going to get wet. Maybe I better put a roof on it. And
right.
If I'm going to have a roof, maybe I should just go ahead and enclose the upper section of it. So, you know, we wound up with what looks like a condo. And my buddy who saw it for the first time said, man, you built a pondo.
Why not?
And that's what we called it, our pondo.
Our pondo, huh? Did you stock it with any fish, or did it have any fish in there?
Yes, we did. We stocked it with bass and brim.
Oh, man.
Bluegill and shellcracker brim. So it's a nice balance of fish, and of course we get a batch from time to time to fry up and enjoy, so it gives us all kind of possibilities there.
And you said you had black bear in that area?
We do, yes. Georgia has bear in three sections, way up north in the mountains,
mm-hmm.
and then in the Okefenokee Swamp, there is a population of bear, and then the smallest population is where we are, which is along the Okmulgee River, and there have been some studies done about the population, and, you know, it's really interesting, but to have such a wide range of wildlife on our place, white-tailed deer, of course, and the black bear, and then, of course, all manner of raccoons and possums and fox squirrels and cat squirrels and armadillos, unfortunately,
yeah.
And wild hogs, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, native birds like quail and wild turkey and other species are with us. So, you know, when I take a walk in the woods, man, there's all kind of things to watch for.
I love it. I used to live in Maryland, and I used to have a lot of, we had like 2 acres, all trees, in the backyard. And we had a lot of wildlife, and that's I love that living. It's wonderful.
Absolutely, and as you can imagine, it provides such a great balance for me. You know, mm-hmm. you go out on tour. Of course, we haven't been able to tour because of COVID and over right. a year now. But when I have been on these tours, sometimes rather lengthy tours, and you're in an electric atmosphere, of course, in these big cities, and there's the energy of that big cities produce, and of course the actual concerts themselves and big crowds. And when I get home, man, it's Charlene, and I get to walk in the woods and hear the sound of the wind in the pines and the crunch of leaves underfoot. It kind of helps keep your head screwed on the right way.
It does. It really does. Nothing like nature, man. Nothing like nature. The movie, you know, I was surprised, you know, it was very nice for you to have, you had Charlie Daniels, which he passed away, and you got to have him in your movie before that, which was, it was a nice, very nice surprise, and to have President Carter in there, too, was pretty cool.
Yes, the president and I and, you know, others that are in the music world here in the South, in the Macon, Georgia area,
right.
We're very close to Carter. You know, we did benefits for Carter to help raise money for his presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And even before that, when he was governor, he came down to the studio in Macon, Capricorn Studios.
Yep.
He asked really great questions. He was genuinely and sincerely interested in learning about the music business and the recording process and other things. And that really surprised all mm-hmm. of us, of his sincerity, you know. So when he started to announce his running for presidency, we jumped right in and we said, you know, we'd like to support this. And this was the first time, if I'm correct, where the federal government would match funds raised by private funding. So,
right.
you know, we were able to kind of double up the funding, the money that we could raise, and then the federal funds would match that. And I think it really helped his campaign, and we've remained friends ever since.
You know, we need more rock and roll presidents. You know that?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because some of your listeners may not know that there is a wonderful documentary out on President Carter called Jimmy Carter, the Rock and Roll President.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Seen that. definitely need to spread the word on that.
Yeah, I remember when the Allman Brothers, and probably you were there too, visited the White House, and he did what is it, Salt Peanuts or something? I remember
yes,
that.
Yes, that was right. That was the first White House Jazz Festival out on the lawn of the White House, and you had Herbie Hancock,
right?
Chick Corea and Cecil Taylor, and just all these luminaries of jazz there, and they got Carter up on stage to make him sing Salt Peanuts, which is a pretty funny part of the film.
that was pretty cool. It, you know, all we need is more rock and roll presidents, and the world will be great.
Well, you know, it was an interesting time because if you recall, you had Jerry Brown from California also
True.
Running for the nomination
yep.
in the Democratic Party. And, of course, he had Linda Ronstadt and the Eagles on his side. And so we kind of had a war of the bands to run for president there.
Yeah, Jackson Brown was another one that was on his side as well. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, with our crew, we had the Allman Brothers Band and Marshall Tucker
oh, yeah.
Band, and we had Wet Willie and Charlie Daniels. And
yeah. Yeah, no, no, Carter.
Our guy won.
Carter won hands down, man. Better music.
Love it, love it.
What was it? Oh, the ending of the film was really cool with Keith Richards. Keith being Keith, right?
Oh, he's very Keith. And you know, he made a really lovely statement on my behalf.
Uh-huh.
I'll always be grateful for, and it's a nice way to wind up all the interviews for the film. And then to follow that with the song Georgia on My Mind.
Right.
And that, by the way, that was a live version that I did with the Frankfurt Radio Big Band some years ago.
Right.
A concert in Frankfurt, Germany. And that was Alan's idea as well, to do it that way. And also his idea to have the piano go outside into the woods to get some shots of it like that. And I think that adds a little spice to the film.
Well, Dickie Betts lives about 20 minutes from me. I'm in Sarasota.
And
he was born. He was born and raised here, I guess. What I heard is Dickie retired. I don't think he's doing music anymore.
Well, that's true. Bless his heart. I guess it's been maybe close to 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
He had a severe fall when
right.
he was playing with his dog out on the dock behind his house, and bumped his head really hard, had a subdural hematoma, and that caused some issues for him, I know. And, of course, at the age that he is now, that didn't really help matters. So, you know, he's made his mark, man.
Oh, yeah.
He's contributed so much to music in general. Great songwriting, songs like In Memory of Elizabeth Reed, High Falls and La Brea's, and of course Blue Sky and Rampant Man and Jessica.
Yep.
So he's left a wonderful legacy. And by the way, I've become very good friends with his son Dwayne.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, Dwayne and Dwayne Betts and Devin Allman have the Allman Betts Band now.
Great band. Yep.
Another member of the Allman Betts Band is Barry Oakley Jr.
Mm-hmm.
So those guys are doing real well, and they're, I think, done two records at present, and they're really gaining a great following.
I covered a lot of, Dickie did a lot of benefits here in Sarasota, and to raise money for kids and things like that. And I covered, the shows, and I met Dwayne, a really nice guy. And if you close your eyes, he sounds just like Dickie, man. He's a great guitar player.
And he's developing his own style as well. Of course, it's only natural that he would pick up a lot of the style that his dad is known for.
Right.
But he's really coming into his own these days. And aside from that, he looks like his dad.
He does.
When I first saw him, it was like, wow, that's a young Dickie Betts right there.
Yeah.
It's quite ironic.
Dickie was so cool when he came in to do the show. He walked by himself. He was far away, and I guess he parked his car, and he just walked in. It's his neighborhood where it was, done. And he had a cowboy hat. Yeah, I mean, he looked right something right out of a Western, you know, he like a gunslinger.
Well, Dickie is quite a great outdoorsman.
Uh-huh.
You know, he really is an incredible archer.
Really?
I've seen Dickie hit moving targets.
I didn't know that.
A bow and arrow, and that's a great skill that is not easy to do.
Huh.
I think he's kind of semi-retired from some of that as well, but multi-talented guy.
Yes, he is. I love your work on Jessica, by the way. I mean, that's incredible.
Well, I appreciate that. It was a wonderful vehicle for a 20-year-old piano player at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I had just come into the band. You know, the way all that happened was in 72, of course, this is after the death of Dwayne Allman with
right.
a motorcycle accident. The band went out as a five-piece band with no replacement. You just don't replace Dwayne Allman anyway with another guitar player.
Yeah.
And, you know, that put so much pressure on Dickie. I mean, he had never really played slide before, and he had to cover all those slide parts that Dwayne was known for. And they came in from that little short tour mentally exhausted. They had lost Dwayne. They were physically exhausted from so many years of touring at the time. And they wanted to take a little break. And Greg had written some songs that he didn't quite think fit the Allman Brothers, and so he wanted to do a solo record. And I was called in to work on that record. manager, said, I want to meet you in my office. And I thought, oh, God, what have I done wrong? You know? But I walk in, and there's all the guys in the band. A few pleasantries went down, and then the shoe dropped. And Phil said, you know, the guys feel like you're taking things in a really interesting direction. And they want to know if you'd like to join the Allman Brothers Band. It did not take me very long to say yes.
And of course, brothers and sisters, the rest is history.
Yes, we finished Greg's solo record, which was called Laid Back, and pretty much the same time we started recording Brothers and Sisters. And I think Brothers and Sisters may have come out first in 1973, and then Greg's solo record right behind it. We did do a couple of solo tours with Greg, and that was interesting, the first one especially, because we had a 13-piece orchestra with us, and along with, you know, five horn players and three background singers. It was a really big band, and it came off really, really well. It was a lot of fun.
You know, there'll never be another Allman Brothers, you know? I mean, the band, it's hard to describe, you know. I mean, they were very eclectic, you know. They call them a southern band, but there's so many different elements in their music, you know, a little jazz, a little this, a little that, but there's such a serious type. It's a serious feeling when you listen to an Allman Brothers band, you know, like Midnight Rider or something. It's deep, you know. And there's no other band that can be like that. It's just like real life. It's you feel them, you know what I mean? It's hard to describe the feeling, but it's serious, you know. It's a serious rock band.
Well, you bring up a great point about the elements that made the Allman Brothers band, and that is of course Dickie studied country music pretty closely, but also musicians like Django Reinhardt, a great gypsy guitarist from the 20s and 30s era, and then bringing in Greg's incredible vocals, best white blues singer ever, Dwayne's magnificent work as a guitarist, and especially on slide guitar, and then the two drummers, you know, that was unique at the time.
Yep.
There was a couple of other bands that did that, but not many, and it blended all that stuff together, elements of jazz that you mentioned, but also rhythm and blues and soul. So it was a melting pot of styles that made up the brothers. And then, of course, the songwriting of Greg and of Dickie that contributed to make it more contemporary.
Yeah, I miss Greg a lot. I mean, you know, it's not the same not having him around. It really isn't.
Well, you know, there were especially two, you know, you mentioned earlier Charlie Daniels. I was so grateful to get Charlie on the film.
Yep.
And that was done at a tribute to Charlie that I was happy to be involved in. I was in the basic band that backed up everybody, all the special guests, and I was very fortunate for that. But there's two especially people that I wish I could have gotten that we could not, and that was Greg, because he just got too ill towards the end to do anything like that. And the other one was Mac Revenack, Dr. John.
Dr. John, yeah.
I had the privilege of working with Mac, and, well, it was prior to the Almonds, so it would have been in 1971. And I learned so much from Mac, and we became close friends and stayed in touch through all the years. And he also just got too ill to be able to be on camera, so I wish I could have gotten those two guys, but they know I love them.
I had a great interview with Mac. The only problem was it was very hard to understand him, and I had to go over the interview several times.
Yes.
Because of that Cajun accent, you know?
Yes, he does. That very, very strong Cajun Louisiana accent and phraseology as well, you know?
Exactly.
Instead of saying two or three times, he'll say three or two times.
But he was so cool, you know, and my mom was Cuban, and he loved that Cuban music, and, you know, we hit it off real well. He was a really good guy, really good guy.
Well, you can find a lot of things on YouTube these days, as we all know.
Yeah.
There is a YouTube with Mac playing a version of When the Saints Go Marching In, and anybody that cares to do so, you should really look that up.
Okay.
It's absolutely phenomenal. phenomenal.
Yeah, I will. Yep. A couple of local heroes that you, I'm sure you knew, Dan Toler. He was also, he was at that benefit. He played. And also Larry Reinhart. That's another local hero.
Rhino. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to know Dan pretty well. I never knew Larry that well. But, of course, you know, Dan and his brother Frankie were in the Allman Brothers, a iteration of the Allman Brothers band, for two or three years. And he was also a monster player, no doubt about it. And a sad loss that he's not with us anymore.
Yeah, Toler's band is still around also. I mean, some of the guys from that band. And, you know, they play around here every once in a while. We got Mick Jagger bought a home for his girlfriend. Did you know that, his girlfriend's a ballet dancer?
Yes, yes. And I did read that.
Did you read that?
It's nice to know we're neighbors now.
And he's got, he actually bought a house, like 5 minutes from here in Lakewood Ranch. And I also had Bernard Fowler on my show not long ago either. He was a good guy.
Oh, Bernard's fantastic. Just an incredible singer, fun guy to be with.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been there almost, well, I was there before Bernard by about 7 years, I think. But he came in for the Steel Wheels tour in 89, and of course he's been there ever since. And we have a wonderful close relationship. We've done some shows outside of the Stomps together, which has always been an honor. It's just a real gentleman and a fabulous singer.
Yeah, he sure is.
And by the way, a hell of a percussionist. You know, he played percussion in Herbie Hancock's, one of Herbie Hancock's bands.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Huh.
Yep.
How about that? I always heard Marvin Gaye was a good percussionist, too. A lot of people told me that.
Well, I imagine he was. He was a genius at many other things, that's for sure.
Yeah. I want to talk about tree farming a little bit. Is it true? I read that around 49% of forests in the U.S. were owned by families. Is that true?
Yes, you know, and that's one of the unique things about America. You know, when you look at a country like Canada, a wonderful country, of course, but most of the forest land there is owned by the crown, meaning the government.
Right.
And that's a whole different scenario. You know, the way I like to put it is when people, individuals, own their own backyards, they're going to take good care of it. You
sure.
know, they're going to keep it clean. They're going to tidy it up.
Makes sense.
Look after it. And I, you know, I think that's what's great about that bulk of forest land that's owned by individuals throughout our country. And, you know, I'd like to say to people, just stop and think a minute about all these things that trees and forests do for us. I mean, materials to build our homes and schools and churches and offices, materials to make books and magazines and newspapers and packaging products, all of those things that come through to you from Amazon and those cardboard boxes, you know, those are elements of trees. There's medicines that come from certain trees around the world. They provide home and shelter to all manner of wildlife. They clean our air. They clean our water. And I just think there's no more important natural resource than we have than trees and forests. And one personal connection, when I first got into this, was thinking, well, where does that marvelous instrument that has given me so much joy and such a wonderful career come from? And, of course, it comes from the resource of wood. And just about every other musical instrument has some element of wood in them. Very few do not. I mean, even a saxophone has to have a reed to work. So, you know, when you think deep about this, and here's the trick. You know, we want to have forests that we use for production to create those things I just mentioned. But you also want to have forests for aesthetics. Just that walk in the woods that we talked about earlier. Forests for enjoyment, natural parks, national forests, and wildlife refuges and the such are very important. And I think we're blessed in America to have a lot of that so that people, the general public, can go to these places and enjoy, for instance, Mirror Woods out in San Francisco, one of the most magnificent places you can ever walk with. Commission for Trees and Forests, as you know, and I think you mentioned some of the books that I've written. The first book was called Forever Green, The History and Hope of the American Forest, and then a children's book called The Tree Farmer, and then I have a book that addresses smart growth so that we can keep forests as forests and, you know, depend on cities to be cities, and that book is called Growing a Better America, Smart, Strong, and Sustainable.
Huh. Yeah, I'm gonna get the one for the kids for all my grandkids. I think that'll be great. They'll love that.
Well, it's so important to get young children that age, you know, in the 3, 4, 5, 6 year old category, in tune with what nature is all about, because you know that will stick with them.
Sure.
And if they have some kind of understanding at that age, then they're very likely to carry that understanding forward in their adult lives.
BBS Radio was originally located in Paradise. And you know, Paradise, the whole city burnt down, including the radio station. So they moved to Lafayette. Last year, my niece, she lives in Colorado, her house, she had to evacuate, and her house was almost burnt down. Why don't they take the initiative to prescribe burn now that they know there's so many fires coming?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, we have a new administration now, thank God. And, the previous administration really didn't have much of a handle on environmental concerns and they ignored the truth of climate change. There were some comments made, I must say, by some members of the previous administration concerning management of forests, and I do applaud that. Look, forests are like gardens, you know. You don't plant a garden and then just let it grow with weeds and you know, don't tend it. You need to tend your garden, and you need to tend forest land. You mentioned prescribed burning. That's certainly a part of what could be done to help prevent those catastrophic wildfires. But there's other things. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure if you're aware of my little fledgling television program. It's called America's Forests.
Okay.
And it runs on PBS. We have completed 7 episodes so far. One of the episodes was in California, and we went to Paradise and saw the devastation there. It was jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
I mean, there were still, and this is, almost a year after the fire, and there were still burnout vehicles on the sides of the road.
Crazy.
They cleaned a good bit of it up, but it was still just so rapid to see what had occurred in that town. And we met with a fine young man, Charles. I can't remember Charles's last name at the moment, but he had barely gotten out with his family.
Mm-hmm.
Lost everything, his home and all the contents of the home, vehicles, everything. And he was running a campaign to rebuild Paradise, mm-hmm. which I thought was absolutely amazing.
Right.
You know, after you have a catastrophic loss like that, to head up an effort to bring people back to that city and try to rebuild. And so I admired his tenacity about that.
So what can be done? I mean, what needs to be done to get these fires under control? Because it looks like a losing cause to me. You know, every time there's a big fire like that, it just wipes out so many acres, you know?
Well, there's a number of things that can be done and that are being done, by the way. Governor Newsom, along with the people that run the Cal Fire organization, that are the people that you know, are called upon when these fires do break out. One of the things they were doing was finding at-risk forests along highways,
right,
where they could clear out on either side of the highway, say 300-400 feet, using mechanical equipment, using what we call these mulchers, where you can grind up the undergrowth and to where it just becomes chips. And of course they leave the mature trees so that the beauty is still there, but basically what they're doing is getting rid of the underbrush that is so susceptible to a fire being started along these highways. If someone throws a cigarette out or you know, a spark from a car or something like that could occur, then that gives Cal Fire, if a fire does more time to address it and to keep it from becoming a, 10,000-acre fire.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing, and I think you're going to be seeing more and more of that. Another thing that needs to be done is addressing these communities that live in those high-risk areas.
Exactly.
They need to go ahead and get a plan to put a fire break around those communities.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I don't think it's like the people that build right on the ocean. That's another issue, right?
Right.
If you're going to put a house, 100 feet from an ocean, you're going to be susceptible to that hurricane.
That's right.
It's going to come in and wipe you out. So I think, first of all, you need to be careful where you build these communities. If you are going to build it in a somewhat at-risk area, then you need to do some planning for the community to get those fire breaks all around, and also to get the residents comfortable with things like mm-hmm. prescribed burns. A lot of people are just afraid of fire, and they should be, because it can be catastrophic. But when you use it to clear the underbrush, then it's a very, very good thing. And here in the South, in Georgia and in Florida as well, as you probably know, and throughout Alabama, Mississippi, and the Carolinas, this is standard practice. I perform prescribed dead burns on my place every year.
Yeah, I watched you do it. It's very organized, and it doesn't get out of control or anything. It's very, very systematically, I think it's a good thing.
Well, and you have to understand all the elements involved. First of all, how much moisture is in the ground?
Right.
What type of litter is on the ground? How much litter is on the ground? What's the relative humidity at the time you want to burn? Weather can change on a dime, mm-hmm. and you have to be very, very careful and sensitive and, be in touch with all of these things that can occur. And then you have to be prepared if a fire does jump a fire break.
Right.
You have equipment right there on site that can deal with that, whether you're talking about vehicles that carry water and tanks, or whether you're talking about a plow that can cut the fire off, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the firemen, man. They work so hard, and sometimes it's like a losing battle. They try to save the homes, but sometimes they just can't do it,
Yeah. But one more thing I will mention, and I touched on it a little bit, but that is to address climate change.
Right.
If we can, I'm so glad to see us rejoin the Paris Accords.
Mm-hmm.
This is a global issue, and it needs to be dealt with globally, and without the United States participating, it just wasn't going to go anywhere. So now we're back in it. I think you see a lot more electric vehicles these days. You see more wind and solar these days, alternative energy to help clean things up and help us battle climate change. Isn't it interesting? And I'm sure a lot of your listeners have seen or heard on the news where when COVID hit and caused everything to slow down to such an extent, the reduction that happened in terms of pollution, air quality, the improved air quality and so forth.
Well, that makes sense.
We don't want to be shut down all of our lives,
right.
But we need to pay attention to what we can do to do better.
Yeah, and we see what pollution can do to cities like Mexico City and China. I mean, it's they can get that bad here. I'm sure LA's pretty bad. Yeah.
Absolutely, Ray. We've been to Sao Paulo a couple of times.
Right.
Dogs, and that's another example of a heavily, heavily polluted city.
Oh, it's horrible. It really is.
Yeah.
How many horses do you guys have? Is it just the two, or do you have more?
We have four horses now, and, you can only ride one at a time. And Rosie doesn't ride quite as much anymore as she used to, but she still rides some. And of course, I love to ride. But we're actually, in addition to what we do at Charlaine in our woodlands, we are going to add a component of horseback trail riding.
Oh, wonderful. Beautiful.
And that's going to be pretty cool. People can either bring their own horse or they can use one of ours. And we got miles and miles and miles of trails we can ride.
Yeah, I love to ride horses, man. Me and my wife both. My wife's from Kentucky, so she's really into horses.
she comes by it honestly if she's from Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. for some reason, she always gets the horse that does crazy things, you know, like stands up on his back hooves and it tries to throw you off and, you know, falls down in the water, you know, dips in the water. And I don't know. She always gets a crazy horse for some reason.
Well, that reminds me of my friend who told me he went to a cattle drive and they arrived and they started looking at the horses and picking out the ones that, you know, one fellow said, well, this looks good. What's his name? Well, that's old Jim. This is a mare over here. But what's her name? Well, that's old Bessie. Which one is mine? That one's named Twister.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Well, Rose Lane's horse is gorgeous, man.
I think she was on... Roxy is her name.
What a beautiful horse. Yeah.
Triple registered horse, Tennessee Walking Horse Association, the Painted Horse Association, and the Racking Horse Association. A beautiful horse. She's got some age on her now.
Uh-huh.
We've enjoyed her for many, many years. You can still ride her, but she's close to 30 now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we don't ride her quite as much. She's probably going to be with us another 5 to 7 years, though.
Right. Yeah. My son-in-law's mom just had to put her horse down. It was very, very sad. When they bought her, they weren't, you know, sometimes you're not sure how old the horse really is, you know, and when they bought her, I think she was already like 24, 25 years old. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, she loved that horse.
Well, that's the tough thing about any animal, and, you know, we've had to deal with, we have a big stable of dogs as well, kennel full, I should say,
wonderful.
Dogs. We do quail hunting on our place, the traditional southern quail hunts, and, you know, you lose one of those precious things, it just breaks your heart. Cats that we've had to put down when they get old and feeble, and the same with horses. It's always a very difficult and heartbreaking thing to go through, but you hang on to the wonderful memories that you have, also the joy that they've given you.
Chuck, sounds like you live in paradise. Can I give you a lot of money and spend a week there?
Come on down, brother. Come on down.
All right, man. I'll bring my wife and the grandkids. I'll have a ball.
We do, you know, I mentioned the horseback trail riding that'll be coming soon. We sometimes offer retreats for groups.
Oh, great.
And my wife is an artist. Rose Lane is a visual artist, mostly in the oil medium. And sometimes we'll put together an instructor that'll come in, and we'll have a group of maybe 10 or 12. And we have several facilities that we can, we have an art studio that is a generous size where people can paint if you want to be indoors. And then, of course, we have a lot of outdoor possibilities in the forest and the gardens and the animals and all that.
You don't teach piano, too, do you?
Well, now that you mention it, we do have a website for that, and that I'm partners with a guy, Howard Citron, who is just a wonderful man and great with technicalities.
Uh-huh.
And we put together a website that's called I Rock You, and that's the letter I, the word rock, and the letter U. And this is piano instruction over the internet.
Oh, wow.
I don't do so much of it directly myself, but I organize the songs. We license the songs. It's mostly all rock and roll songs, maybe a little blues and jazz thrown in, and some New Orleans styles. But we have these really talented young folks, mostly from the New York area.
Right.
Some that have gone to the New School, which is a great school for music, and other, music schools. And so we put the lessons in the hands of these guys, and they have 7 different levels for each song. So if you're just a beginner, you do the very, very simple version, and then as you get better, you go to step 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And it's done well for us, and we've had a lot of really positive comments. All the people that subscribe have given us accolades, and we're grateful for that. And we enjoy the idea of teaching folks.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of artists, great legendary artists now that are doing that. You know, like Billy Cobham is got kind of a camp that he does, you know, for drums. There's a lot of people doing
Yeah, they are. And bless his heart and rest his soul, Chick Corea, who just passed away.
Yeah.
Online instruction subscription thing. And, of course, what a master he was.
Yes, he was.
And I've seen, you know, I forget the fellow's name, but there's the piano guy who has a website. And, mm-hmm. you know, so there's a lot of competition out there. But we have the best one, right?
Yeah, I believe it, man. You're an awesome player. Two of the events that you've done, I'm very impressed by. First of all, George Harrison tour in Japan. I saw George back in 74 when he had Ravi Shankar, and it was a good tour, but, you know, his voice was all messed up, you know, so he couldn't sing too good back then. But, yeah, I heard you try to get him to come to the U.S. after that tour.
We tried so hard. It was an incredible band. Of course, it was Eric Clapton's band.
Oh, my goodness.
You had Andy Fairweatherlow on guitar. You had Ray Cooper on percussion and Steve Ferroni on drums, Nathan East on bass, Greg Fillinganes and myself on keys, Tessa Niles and Katie Kassoon singing. And, you know, what happened, and there's some tragedy involved, and that was that we had done the 24 nights at the Albert Hall program, which, of course, also became a record. And Eric was going to take a year off and be with his son, Connor. Well, we all know what happened. Connor had that horrible accident where he fell out of the high-rise in New York and died. And so rather than take that year off, Eric figured, hey, I need to work. And he and George had a very unique relationship, as most people know.
Oh, yeah.
And so he kind of threw the gauntlet down to George and said, you know, man, you never tour. You sit at home. Mm-hmm. You do an album every 4 or 5 years. You know, come on. Get out in the trenches with the rest of us. And George was like, but I don't have a band. I don't have a band. And Eric says, well, I got a band, and you can have it, and you can have me. How about that shit? So... that's what happened. So how do you refuse that, right?
What a tour, though. Clapton and Harrison? Oh, my God.
it was absolutely fabulous. And, you know, the rest of the folks in the band, we kind of felt like Eric was going to move on and maybe change up the band and do different things. And so we went to George and said, George, you know, even if Eric doesn't come along, you could take this to the States, and it would be so great.
Yep.
And, you know, I think he... You mentioned that 74 tour, and I think he did have that difficulty with his voice.
Right.
He lost his voice, and that was one issue. But the other issue, I remember reading that a couple of times after the concerts, he looked out into the audience and saw all the trash and the beer bottles and the junk that goes along, and he said, wow, man, am I creating, you know, this?
Right.
Do I need to be creating this? He was very sensitive to those kinds of issues. And so I think that was part of his decision not to come back to the States. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what, it was a fabulous tour, and I wish he had.
Yeah. Yeah, I miss George. Really miss him. He was one of my favorite Beatles. Him and John.
As a person, I mean, God, a Beatle. I mean, I never figured I'd get to play with a Beatle. But aside from that, just as a human being, I mean, the guy was so gracious.
Yep.
He was so down to earth, full lovely little chuckle when he would laugh at something that I'll never forget. He was generous to all of us in every way. You know, he'd ring us up after a concert in every individual's hotel room and say, got a bit of food here. Would you like to come down?
You have a pretty good accent, by the way.
Well, he was just so lovely, and his wife Olivia and his son Danny.
Yep.
Of course, Danny's carrying on and plays guitar and has done a few records, and Olivia's fortunately still with us and just a lovely person as well.
You know, the Allman Brothers have their kids, you know, creating the band and everything. I don't see why the Beatles kids can't get together, you know? They're all there. They're all musicians. Why not?
Why not indeed? I had the pleasure of working a little bit with Julian Lennon not long ago on a benefit concert, and mm-hmm. it worked out great. And that was in Atlanta, as I say, at a charity function. And, you know, you've got Danny, don't you? And then Sean.
You got Sean, right.
But so, you know, I mean, there's siblings out there.
You got Ringo. You got Zach Starsky also.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I interviewed Julian. He's such a nice guy. And, you know, I mean, just to listen to him, he sounds just like John, you know? It's
Absolutely. He does, yeah. And looks very much like him.
He does. But his music is so good, man. When he first came out, you know, with Velotte and all the first album, he was incredible. And I told him that. And I interviewed him during the last album he did. He had Steven Tyler on the album. That was also a good album, the last album he put out.
Yeah.
Very talented guy. What?
Yes, indeed.
What, another instance, you, one of my favorite bands has always been Pink Floyd. And David Gilmour gave you such a compliment, saying you were the best guy to sing that Comfortably Numb out of all the guys he had. And I agree. I've heard them all, and I agree. You nailed it, man.
Well, you're too kind. I appreciate that. You know, he really surprised me on that. We had gone through the rehearsals and covered all the material, and Comfortably Numb was the last one to come up.
Right.
And he turned up to me and said, "Hey, man, you want to sing on this?" And I thought he just meant, you know, sing on the choruses, some harmony or something. And I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll join in." And he said, "Well, I want you to do the counterpart." And I went, "Whoa, really? okay." but what an invitation, man. It was incredible. And I love doing that part night after night. And, you know, it's in the documentary now. We're hoping it can stay in there.
Yeah.
We're having a little trouble with Roger Waters, to be frank with you.
Oh, gosh.
Hopefully we'll get that cleared up. And right now it is in the documentary.
Yeah, how difficult was it to learn the material? I mean, you know, Richard Wright was another favorite of mine. He was so instrumental to the band.
Well, he was brilliant, of course.
Yeah.
And, here's the deal. I had my old friend and partner, Greg Fillinganes,
right,
on the stage as well. And, you know, we learned when we were working with Eric Clapton together, how we operate. You know, I mean, Greg is brilliant with the orchestrated parts of music and covering those kinds of things. And, you know, I'm the more the organic guy on piano and Wurlitzer and organ. And so, you know, we divided up the duties diligently. And when you ask about having to learn all that material, David sent me a live CD, well, a couple of CDs, of shows that he had recently done in
right.
South America. And so I studied those things, you know, hours on end and, you know, went to my little practice room and turned it up loud so that I could play along with the music and listen to it very closely, put a magnifying glass on it, so to speak. And so when I got there, I felt pretty well prepared. Of course, there was adjustments to be made, but it worked out really well.
I think that's amazing how you can do that. You know, if Pink Floyd does tour again, as you know, with David and Nick, they should bring you in as the permanent keyboard player.
Well, hey, listen, it was such an honor to work with David.
Yeah,
and who knows? He may do some things going forward.
Sure.
In COVID era, I think it's affected him and all major artists
everyone,
as well. So
everyone.
I imagine David's probably been doing some writing. His wife, Holly,
yep.
Is a great lyricist, and so they've probably put together some things. It wouldn't surprise me if David pulls a trick out of his hat at some point in the not-too-distant future.
Oh, yeah, he likes to keep busy.
Yeah.
The other thing about that show, man, you got to play in Pompeii. How incredible was that?
It was absolutely stunning. For those that may not know, the arena we were not able to use because of the historic structure.
Right.
The bleachers, you know, no one could sit in the bleachers.
Right.
So all the audience was on the floor. And really, it's not that big. And so it looked big on the production and on the DVD that We did two nights there, which gave some great choices for what versions of the songs to use and how to deal with the production aspect. And I think David just did a brilliant job of editing that and of mixing it. And I'm just very fortunate to have been a part of it.
How were the acoustics?
Oh, amazing. I mean, yeah. You know, the arena, the bleachers are not real steep, so
right.
They kind of roll out, and that gives the sound a chance to flow out and not be bouncing back in your face. And so it's beautiful acoustics, and of course we had an incredible crew that mixed everything very carefully, and it was just an extraordinary experience.
Did you get a chance to walk around and see Pompeii?
I did, yeah. I walked, you know, we had obviously a day of rehearsal as well, so
mm-hmm.
had plenty of time to explore the ruins and to read more about it online and books, and just to think back of, you know, what happened there, with what used to be a civilization being wiped out
incredible.
In short order.
Yeah.
Quite incredible.
Yeah. I got one more question for you, a final question, but I just wanted to go back to the tree thing real quick. You mentioned that France actually documents their trees. Is that right?
Paris.
Oh, Paris, okay.
You know, people call Paris the city of lights, but
right.
It's also the city of trees, and all the trees throughout the city are indeed documented.
Oh, wow.
Very, very well looked after, so that's pretty incredible.
That is incredible. I never knew that.
Yeah.
Chuck,
well, Ray, it's been huh? such a joy, my friend.
Me too,
really
man.
Incredible. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, I enjoyed it, Chuck. You know, next time you get, you're inviting some people over to your place, let me know.
I got your number, baby.
All right, man. It sounds great. You live in paradise, my friend.
Thanks again. It's been a great conversation, and let's do it again sometime.
We sure will. Thank you so much, Chuck. The best to your wife and the family, okay?
Okay, and to yours.
All right, man.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye now. Chuck Level, the Tree Man documentary. Chuck Level, the Tree Man is the cinematic documentary that explores the world's fascination with the greatest piano and keyboardist over the last 40 years. Follow Chuck's story as he divides his talent between music force, and family. It stars Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Charlie Watts, and Ronnie Woods, directed by Alan Farce. The documentary is full of star power. It includes interviews with Billy Bob Thornton, Mick Jagger, President Jimmy Carter, Eric Clapton, Keith Richards, Bonnie Raitt, Dickie Betts, Paul Schaefer, Chris Robinson, Charlie Daniels, Miranda Lambert, Charlie Watts, Bruce Hornsby, Julian Lennon, Mike Mills, John Bell, Pat Monahan, Ronnie Wood, Warren Haynes, John Mayer, and David Gilmour, plus many, many more. It's available to purchase right now. You can buy it on Blu-ray at Amazon.com with the capability of reaching more than 100 million homes in North America and nearly 1 billion homes worldwide. Gravitas Ventures is making this must-see movie available on several VOD platforms, including iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, VUDU, and PlayStation. And I actually saw it on Netflix. For more information about Chuck Level, visit www.chucklevel.com, his official website. Also, www.chucklevel.com. And also at www.facebook.com/chucklevel for Facebook, Twitter, twitter.com/chucklevel. He's also on Instagram, www.twitter.com, Chuck Level, instagram.com/Chuck Level. Wait a minute, let me get that right. It's twitter.com, Chuck Level, instagram.com/Chuck Level. Okay? And also American Forest with Chuck Level. Very special thanks to Mark Pucci Media for arranging this interview with Chuck Level and the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen. For each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, you can also contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please, please, please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. And guess what? It's real news. And of course, my new book is finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1. Chronicles, Truths, Confessions, and Wisdom from the Music Legends. That set is free. You can order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com and also amazon.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends the world will ever know. A book review by Literary Titan gave it 5 stars. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll see you next time. Peace. Stay safe. Stay safe out there. That's the main thing. And good health. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on PBS Radio, Station 1.